Hello, I'm Jack McMee, and welcome to The Great Game, a podcast all about Australian mega games. This episode is all about death in mega games, but before we get into that, just a quick round of news. MegaCon happened last weekend, so you've already missed it, I'm sorry to say. We didn't get this episode out in time to advertise it, but if you are interested in joining the next one, and it is a lot of it is online for those of us in Australia, so there is still a lot of excellent stuff happening for those of you who cannot make it to the location of it in the UK. The place to go is megacon.org.uk for news. Melbourne Mega Games has just released their upcoming 2023 game list. Their next mega game will be Phase Anatomy, a mega game of magic, medicine, and mischief. And it'll be running in July with 2 36-player games. So get in quick. They'll also will be doing a mega game mixer at the Railway Hotel in Windsor on Friday, 24th of February. And they are looking for playtesters for anyone who is keen to get in and playtest a mega game who's in the area. So definitely check them out. Melbourne Mega Games on Facebook or Instagram, or at Melb Mega Games on Twitter. Pat from Sydney Mega Games has put out his some news that he'll be running my game God Emperor on the 6th of May. So definitely get into that one. It's quite good, I think. And it inspired a lot of discussion in this episode, which is all about player death in mega games. It's something we've thought and talked about a lot. And after our previous episode, speaking with Leon and Jeff about Crisis in Elysium, we both decided it was time for a deep dive. So, without further ado, on to the episode. Awesome. So this episode is going to be all about death in mega games. And what really got me started on this topic is just our interview with Leon in our last episode, where Leon mentioned that the feeling that death is almost never actually worthwhile as a mega game mechanic, or that the way death has occurred in mega games in the past has almost always been not great, or not worked out the way it's expected, or not even really done much. Like, you often find that the player just, even if they do get a new role, they feel like basically the same exact person, just like their twin brother has appeared, or twin sister has come in randomly and taken their place. And like, the death didn't really do much, or didn't mean much. So I was interested in exploring that topic, just thinking about, is death a problem in mega games? Is it something that we can think of better ways around? Why do we want death in mega games in the first place? What are your thoughts, Pat?
Well, I think it is. I think there's a lot of answers to those questions, and there's a lot of questions to ask. I think it's one of those probably not as hotly contested as what is a mega game questions, but it sounds like it's a question everyone involved in mega games has had, you know, has discussed. It's very easy to go and find people's opinions on it all. And I think there's lots of things I want to unpack with this. One thing I think I'm going to refer back to a few times is this article that Jim Wallman wrote, which I might be quoting from a little bit. So this is an article that's on the Mega Game Maker website. He titled it, it's from 2018, and Jim titled it Role Playing Negotiation, Death and Nukes. And in it, it's a bit of a letter to the idea of, you know, if nukes are in a game, they're going to be used, I suppose. And then it rolls on from that topic, that idea, to, you know, how assassination happens in games and what we do about it, I suppose. But one thing, before I get too off track, I just wanted to pull out from that, and I'm keen to explore as we go through, is that one of the conclusions Jim came to in that, and I quote from the article, he says, the important point here, and what he's referring to is when people want to assassinate other players in games. He says, the important point here is not the methods or the possibility of assassination, but the actual motivation that is behind that question. And then, you know, he digs into that in a lot more detail, and we'll go through it. But I'm keen to have this conversation in that lens, I suppose. But before I get carried away, why do people want death in mega games? I can tell you why I wanted death in a mega game. And it's because I thought it was real. It made the stakes high. and it, you know, it gave players something to lose. Whether or not I pulled that off, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think there is a level of perception that if we're trying to simulate something real or give players a bit of verisimilitude about, you know, the game that they're in and take things seriously, then there's no higher stake than death. Certainly. But as we're going to discuss, it's hard to make those stakes actually mean something in game terms. I guess the other point that we should call out, and Jim calls out in his article as well, is why is death in mega games sometimes it's for historical sort of accuracy, or again it sort of links back to that realism thing, but it's about being truthful to the setting and making people feel like they're really living in a piece of history, if you know, if that's what the game is about. I think they're the main reasons why we want death in mega games. Why is death good? Well, I'm not sure if it is. I think that's what we have to solve today.
We're going to solve the problem for good today.
Yeah, definitively, by the end.
So we're going to start out talking about why do we want death in mega games. Just as an overview of the show tonight, we're going to go into some problems and things to consider when you're adding death to your mega games, and look at how different mega games handle it. And then we're going to expand a bit to look at how death is handled in role-playing games or LARPs or other similar aspects that we can take from and use to improve our mega game mechanics. And we're going to close out with some good death stories from various mega game community members and tragic deaths. I think genre emulation or historical emulation is definitely two of the big issues. I mean, that's why death is included in God Emperor, because it is meant to be a Game of Thrones style game where assassinations and character death is meant to be a big deal and is meant to add a lot of tension to the game. And, you know, of course you have mega games like Everybody Dies by Becky Campbell-Laidley from Becky Blogs, where death is a key part of the experience. So, that's the first reason. And I think the second reason is what you mentioned there, is that you want that feeling of tension, right? Ooh, this is really high stakes. Your character could die.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that causes problems in a mega game is that it turns out those stakes aren't actually that high.
Yes.
Always, right? Like, you die and you're like, oh, I'm just... you know, actually, this didn't really cause a lot of problems for me. Or at least not in an interesting way.
And that's often, I mean, not to dive into being critical about game design, but that often happens in mega games with a lot of mechanics. There's often these things where you're like, that is the ultimate goal. That is the desire of this game. If I obtain that resource or that card, or we achieve this goal, that's the highest possible achievement or stake that we could reach. And then often it's like, okay, well, now you've got +2 in this thing and carry on playing the game. And like, yeah, so I think tension, stakes, and payoff is really important in mega games in general, and it definitely maps to this death stuff. One thing I would say about the genre or the historical period and trying to be faithful, a term that I've seen around, and Jim does use in this article I quoted from, is this duty to history, which is something that I had never used, a term I hadn't used myself, but it turns out it's something that I always actively run away from, because I tend to do all my design work outside historical accuracy and in heavily based fiction for that reason, because I don't want to be bound by people's expectations because they are the expert in this historical period of time, which I know is, you know, just an insecurity of mine, but it's funny that is... that probably is a driving force for why people would rock up to some games and expect that there is going to be death and tragedy and that kind of thing, because they know the history and they know that that's part of the theme of that theater of history.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another article I was reading, which is Assassinations in Mega Games by Dylan Burke from the Wellington Mega Game Collective, which we'll link in the show notes, but which goes over it. A mega game called Barracks Emperor, where the assassination mechanics were in there in order to reflect the history of that period of Roman history, where, you know, there's a rapid turnover in emperors, there's a lot of revolts, people are getting murdered left, right, and center. There is a duty to reflect that history and to make sure it feels like it isn't a disservice to the era or a disservice to the history.
Yeah, yep. So I think that's a really key through line, I think, that maybe isn't something I've personally encountered. I haven't played any historic mega games, but it sounds like it's a really big theme.
Well, I think genre emulation is very similar. It's either duty to your genre, like you're doing a Game of Thrones mega game that needs death. Very similar, I think, to saying, I'm doing this historical period. Right. I want to feel true to that.
Yeah, and I guess I should caveat that because we are going to talk about it. I guess I have done a historical game, which was the Pirate, the Chaos on the Iron Sea game, which we'll talk about a bit more later. But I didn't think of that as a I was trying to keep that as fictional as possible. But you're right, because of the genre, I felt like death had to be built into that because what are the stakes for pirates if they can't die when they're trying to get booty and stuff? So
I think the third reason we haven't talked about it is just because, like, I mean, just because it's a thing that can happen in real life. Like,
right.
Players might inherently just come up to you and say, even if death isn't intended to be a part of this game, they might come up and say, hey, can I assassinate this character? Can I kill this person?
Which is this thing that, again, I'm harping on about it and I'll probably stop soon, but Jim does a really good job in this article talking about this issue that I hadn't considered, which I kind of touched on before, which is why does the player want to do this thing as opposed to other things? And he kind of goes into depth there, even suggests, other things that players might want to try if they find themselves saying, well, I want to kill another player here, but there's no stipulated rules for it. He actually goes through this list of things that you should maybe consider else, you know, doing instead of trying to bend the rules and assassinate. But I think the question about why a player wants to do it is really important, and I hadn't really thought it through other than kind of what you were touching on there, which was for the sake of it and because it happens in this dramatic, like, theater-like state of simulation. Like, it's just assumed it's going to happen. But I think there's some deeper reasons there that could be dug into.
Let's dive into some of the problems and issues around death and the reason why we're kind of skeptical, why it can cause issues or why it can...
why it's like... terrible.
Exactly. I think, like, okay, first of all, it depends on how you handle death in your game, obviously. But the first obvious thing is taking someone out of the game. If you're using a mechanic where it's simply a timeout situation where, you know, you died, you have to stay out for a small period of time and then come back as another character, being taken out of the game just doesn't necessarily feel good. It can create a lot of bad feelings on the part of the player and a lot of confusion or ill feeling.
Yeah, I think like we'll get to it as we run through how some games handle it, but it's a pretty common thread that in some way you are taken out of the game, whether it's temporary or not. And not very satisfying.
Absolutely. It can also some games, a common theme is that you switch role or you switch to a different character. First of all, one of the potential issues with this mechanic is that it can cause a lot of confusion. I think sometimes people have rocked up in a particular costume for a particular character. Like, say you're playing the president of France and you're wearing a beret, you know, things like that. It can kind of lead to this... thing of people treating you like your old character or not being aware that you're a new character,
right?
And ending up causing confusion, not just for players, which is part of a mega game, but also for control, who
right, yeah,
might be. I think that is something that can easily happen. And another problem is just not feeling impactful. Like, I think one of the things we talked about is we want death because we want it to be high stakes, right? Is like death should feel that way. It should feel like this is a big high stakes moment. This character could die. And to use God Emperor as an example, I think the way I handled it in my game is I wanted death to be fairly frequent. So the way I handled it is simply making you lose your prestige and your favor cards. Basically, you lose your items and your stuff, right? which I think was fine. And then the way it worked is that you would lose all your stuff and then you would put a little thing on your name badge that said you are now Jack the Second. And you just keep playing the game, basically. So you just come back as a new thing.
Right.
I think it worked fine. Like, it's not terrible, but it doesn't feel impactful or meaningful.
Right.
It didn't feel like a high-stakes situation.
As a player in that, I agree. It I didn't die, I don't recall. But I think it was really good. It was a good approach to death. I think that it, like, the criticism I would give it is that the stakes weren't high enough. Mm. But the stakes were there. It was a whole failing forward type thing.
Mm.
And it was good because you weren't removed from the game. You didn't have timeout. There was no confusion caused, but you did have, there was a handicap applied because you somehow caused enough trouble that people killed you.
Yeah.
But so that represented, like, the death, like the reasoning behind it well. But I think it worked, it slotted in well, but also maybe didn't have as much impact as some other games would, because God Emperor is, in my mind, geniusly without roles.
I think it worked fine for the type of game. One of the problems we had with it, if any designer is thinking of using a similar system of just losing your stuff, is that before you're about to die, you would just give all your stuff to your team members.
I got a confession. In Crisis in Elysium, when I was told that I had died, I actually did that because I was meant to, I think I was meant to give back my resources, like my currency to them, but I had a bunch of cards in my back pocket and I was meant to get rid of those, and I may have snuck one back to my team.
Absolutely. So you ended up, no one really actually lost anything.
No.
It's fine. It's we did have some fun dramatic death scenes in that.
Right.
There were big dramatic duels, or where the God Emperor executed someone for their heresy, you know.
Yes. I was going to say, that's probably one of the best parts of that system. It was dramatic and it made a big spectacle of it. So the thing to gain out of it was playing that special role in the day as the first person to go in a duel and get killed.
Mm.
Like, like a pistols duel for people who haven't played this game with Nerf guns. It was awesome. And it was such a dramatic, theatrical moment that it kind of compensated for the fact that afterwards that person's like, okay, so I give you these cards, then I tick this thing off here, and then I go back to playing. It still had its moment and it had an impact on, like, the story. Everyone was like, wow, that's, you can get assassinated and killed in this.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose it depends on what you're looking for out of the game, right? If you want to have a big death scene, but then everything is actually fine and that player didn't really actually lose anything, that is good if that's what you're looking for.
So I guess it almost, there seems to be two core questions here. The one that I harped on about from Jim, which is, like, why do players want to do this? But then I guess the other question is, when we're talking about design, why as designers do we want it to be able to happen? Which is probably worth digging into. But talking about the reasons why, like the problems with it happening, you're saying taking players out of the game, causing confusion, not having the right impact. I think these all sort of tie together as we go, like they're all building up the same kind of idea. And I think another component of it is that in mega games, there's so little control around what players are going to do. If you have death built in, you have no control over when it's going to happen unless you really want to script it, and it can happen at the wrong time. Mm. It can happen at really dissatisfying times, or it can happen at really momentous times, but then the mechanics let you down, which is, you know, that happened in both regards in my game of Elysium, Crisis in Elysium. There were moments that were perfectly timed that would have been amazing if there was this mechanical drive behind the death, and it turns out there wasn't so much. And then there was times when, like, when I, my personal experience of dying, it was the second last turn. And by the time I got back, there was about 20 minutes of the game. And I never got an opportunity to pursue whether or not that role change was, you know, rewarding or interesting, which isn't a design flaw necessarily. It's just, you know, the chaos of a game. You can't control the timing of events in mega games unless you're running to a script. Another point there is, this is one that I've definitely encountered in games with a whole variety of mechanics, let alone death, but having players be told that they've just been knocked out, they have to sit in a room and think about what they did and read a new briefing, and they get the impression that they had no control over it, no way to defend against it, and it feels like, you know, it just, you know, slapped them across the face out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a core problem of mega games in some ways. That happens a lot. Not it's just with
bad
death.
Things happening to you and you.
Yeah.
Because there's so much happening, you didn't necessarily have an easy way to defend against that or to feel like it, you had agency over that, or it was the result of your choices, or to feel, like you couldn't defend against it. It feels like you just randomly died out of nowhere.
And I guess, you know, sometimes there's a story afterwards that explains it and you're kind of satisfied. Sometimes that happens in games where people get a bit disheartened about an event that happened and it puts their team back. But afterwards they hear this amazing story and maybe sometimes they are okay with it after all. But I guess all of this leads up to the final point that we kind of plotted out, which is, you know, people just not enjoying the game, feeling bad about it, not being happy.
Discluded. I think for some mega games that might be what you want. I think that
people feeling bad about themselves.
Obviously, want everyone to be happy, but death feeling like I died out of nowhere, or that my death was pretty like there are some games where you might want to have this heroic feel where if you died, it was for this big reason and this big thing happened. And then there are some games like. Where you might want it to feel more like, you know, you died in a ditch. Like, it's a cruel world and death can come at any time and that kind of feeling.
Or just games where you go in knowing that everybody dies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, everybody dies is a great example. I think it's all about setting player expectations up front, right? If you're like, you're probably going to die in this game, then that immediately means that if you die, there's less bad feeling about it. Whereas if you're playing something like Watch the Skies or a similar game where death isn't really highlighted as part of the main rule set, it's not like there's a big thing saying your character might be assassinated in bold at the start on the cover or anything. Like, it's not as highlighted. It's not meant to be as much of a part of the game, and it's much less common. If that happens to you in the game, it can cause a lot of bad feeling because it's not something you were expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, and like I said, all of those points there, I think we've got six sort of symptoms or problems that you encounter when you're trying to put death in a game. I think they all tie together and you can get the perfect storm of all of those things, you know, where the death mechanic takes people out of the game, it confuses everyone. People don't feel like they're impactful anymore. Either, you know, the people who did the assassinating and others who were removed from the game. It can happen at the wrong time. And then, you know, it results in people, you know, having these bad feelings about the experience. It can all just tie together, I think. Yeah, there's some pretty serious problems there from a design perspective.
Absolutely.
That we're going to solve today.
Yeah, we will solve every problem you've ever had to make a game. You will leave this podcast with no problems for the rest of your life. So let's talk about how different games handle it. We've talked about God Emperor a bit. Let's talk about the classic cabinet reshuffle from Watch the Skies. And I think a lot of similar mega games have this type of formula where each player has a role and they go to a specific part of the game to perform that role. Like you have the generals going to the war map, you have the diplomats going to the UN, and if someone is assassinated or if there's, you know, a nuke goes off and people die, if there's some big event that impacts that team or if characters die, then you reshuffle the roles and suddenly the prime minister might need to go to the war map when it's not a part of the game they've dealt with before.
I've got strong feelings about that.
When I first read this mechanic, I really loved it, and I think it does elegant. The good part of it is that it elegantly produces the kind of chaos and confusion that would happen after a country has suffered some kind of major upset, like if the UN was blown up with a nuke or something, you know, or
that's
something
true.
Of that nature happened, is that it has that confusion in it that would happen from people who are new to the role needing to come in and try to handle things that they haven't, you know, previously dealt with. It doesn't take anyone out of the game, which is really good. Like, everyone is always in the game constantly. I think the big downside is the amount of confusion. And not just for players, but control, because suddenly you might end up with, if you've had a big event or if you've had someone who is suddenly now in the war map who has never been at the war map before, that player now has to get to grips with a whole set of rules that they haven't been dealing with. And it almost becomes like a control tax, because control needs to explain this whole set of, new set of rules to them. And it can cause a lot of confusion and problems that way.
Right, yeah, yeah. And I'll admit, I've never actually played Watch the Skies in its vanilla form. I ran a rip-off version of it when I first started stumbling into the mega game hobby. And I feel like, I feel like the points that you've made are pretty valid, and it's actually a relatively smooth way to do it. And I think because of that, it's like, it's almost the default I've found in games that I've witnessed or played in. If this issue comes up, and the controller is not ready for it, this is what they do. They kind of lean back on this shuffle. I guess my bugbear with it is roles and the specific nature of how diverse they are in a lot of games. Like with Watch the Skies, there's an operational map game, there's a political game, there's the science game. They're very different. And if you have people, especially if it's their first time playing, and they come in and they're very, you know, very nervous about the game, but only really comfortable with the role that they've been given, it can be a totally overwhelming experience to suddenly be forced on behalf of their team to start doing something differently. And I can really empathize with that now that I've done Crisis in Elysium a few weeks ago and played as the map sort of operational player for the first time. And I think if I was asked to do that mid-game, I would freak out. Yeah. If to that point I'd just been bullshitting and talking to people, you know, which is usually the role that I play. So that's my reservation there. It can really shock people and maybe throw a spanner in the works for a whole team if they're not prepared for it.
And yeah, and I think, I mean, throwing a spanner in the works, that is what the mechanic is kind of designed to do. But it's just whether it depends on whether that is something people are actually expecting and prepared for and are actually going to be enjoying, or whether it crosses the line into a level of confusion that is just like, you know, I have no idea what's happening on the map. I don't even know how these rules work.
It's the kind of thing where you, like you said before, you want a little bit of a hint or a disclaimer that it could happen, and you want control to be able to handle it very elegantly if people start to panic and are really upset by it. You want to be prepared to manage that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the strengths of mega games is that you can have different sections for different types of players. You can have that more gamey, wargamey side of things at the war map, and the more talkative player, the more extroverted player can go to the UN and be making big speeches. Like, that's a real strength of the medium, I think. And when you suddenly swap things around, and the wargaming, mechanic-minded player is going to the UN without expecting it, and then suddenly the UN player is at the war map and has no idea how that works. That can cause some bad feelings, for sure.
And I think that's the only... That's why I'm honing in on it, because I think in the last few years of design work, I've really become sensitive to that, and I have always designed games where I sort of make it clear what roles are for what kind of people to help players navigate that. So if they are really rigidly different, you want to warn people, I think, that they might end up doing something else on the day, and to give them the comfort too that they can come and say to you, sorry, no, I really don't want to do that.
Actually, that's a great point. I think that's something that I'm going to talk a bit more about in terms of talking about how LARPs and other RPGs things have handled death. But I think one of the really interesting ideas that I've seen is allowing players to opt in, or to say, like, yeah, I'm okay with my character dying in the middle of this game. Like, you know, that for those kinds of players, that can be a really great experience. But for someone who's like, no, I don't want death to be part of my experience, allowing them to do that is, like, I think a really can be, depending on the game you're running, really great.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is actually, so 2 points here. One is the design of Den of Wolves. And I can't actually say if this is the design of the game or if it's the way it was implemented by Dylan over in New Zealand when I went and played in Wellington. But one thing that he did as part of the casting was kind of consent stuff like that, where he gauged what people's willingness was to be a traitor to their team, which is a really important part of that game. And you kind of got to weigh in and say, absolutely not, I really don't want to do that, or yes, I would love to be that, or, you know, I'd be comfortable with it to a degree. And there were several different things that he used for casting like that. So other questions were how willing am I to be in a leadership role where I need to make decisions, that kind of thing. So again, I don't know if that was his decision or the original design for Den of Wolves, or you know, just the default go to casting design. But I think that was really good, and it bordered on that consent stuff. The other thing I was going to say on that, in Crisis in Elysium, we will, you know, I guess we can jump into it now and talk about how they did it, but they kind of did a variation of this where it was an optional shuffle. When I was killed in that game, I was taken aside. I was given a half-page briefing that replaced my existing briefing on my new role in the game. But then I was also told, when you go back to your team, it's up to you mutually as a team to decide if you'd like to shuffle up the roles to represent what's happened. And I didn't bother because it was near the end of the game and it felt unfair to take one of the two non-operational roles, three non-operational roles and thrust them into one of the maps at the last turn. Right. So I didn't bother with that. But that was an interesting sort of midway point, I suppose, where you get the option as the player. Do you want to shake things up now?
That seems great. Giving players the option, that seems really interesting. Let's talk about your mega game, Chaos in the Iron Seas, and how you handled death in that game.
Yeah, so this was the main attempt I've made to simulate death, and it was mixed degrees of success, I think. It suffered from that element of things happening at the wrong time. So in this case, if people died too early, they weren't going to have a fun day, really. But it basically created a mini game on the side of the mega game, a mini mega game, which I think has a name that it's not coming to mind, but I think the UK gang have labeled that as a thing. But it was a council game, essentially, that had overarching control of the broader game. The thematic sense of it was that there was a goddess, I think, or, you know, there was a character, a non-player character run by Control, who ran a council of the dead, people who had passed away, and influenced the game world using events, so causing weather events and stuff like that. They did that at random at first, at the start of the game. It was kind of controlled, player moderator controlled. And then as the game went on and players were killed or assassinated or otherwise, they were taken off to another room where they got a little bit of time to breathe and to unpack what had happened to them. And then they were introduced to this new game where they all sat around a council table and things were proposed by this NPC character. And then the council would vote on it. And sometimes it was to punish ships or crews. Sometimes it was to bless them. Sometimes it was to impact the weather in certain parts of the map, stuff like that. And it was kind of like a destiny fate kind of thing, but it was influenced by the souls of the people who had died. And it was a big sort of political, pseudo-political voting game.
And then at the end, now I was in this game and I didn't actually die and see it, but at the end, you had a big moment when all of the ghost characters and dead characters came out into the main mega game in a big procession.
Yes, and we got to reveal what it was that we'd been doing and what the repercussions of their death had been. And yeah, it was a good, like I was saying about Gotnipro, it was a good dramatic moment, a theatrical moment that really, I think, contributed.
Yeah, I mean, as a non-dead character, I really liked it. I thought it was such a dramatic moment. And it was very cool that assassinating someone or killing someone, which this game didn't have assassination specifically, but you could die by in battle, I believe.
Yeah, I think there were assassinations from memory because that's what always happens. But the main mechanic was, it was like casualties of war when ships were fighting.
So as a living player, it felt really great because if you did kill someone, that person was like out of the game. It felt very impactful and very tense. If you're in a moment when you can die, you're like, oh my God, like I'm going to be out, like, you know.
Yeah, and there were these moments actually early on. I'm happy to say from memory, I don't think anyone died in the first half. And I think that's when it would have been a real bummer because it would have felt like they had nothing to do, even though they were doing this council game. You get a bit bored of that after 4 hours.
If there's only one player in a council game,
Just
voting on something themselves,
I think that was a lucky thing as far as timing goes. And I think we tried to make sure that that happened. But also, there were some moments once people started to die that we did have to reassure players, don't feel too bad. They're okay. They're not taken out of the venue. They're, you'll find out what they're up to later. Like we had to have that conversation because people were a bit like, oh shit, I just ruined that person's day. So I guess we needed a little bit of a disclaimer. We couldn't have all the secrets, but,
it was very secret. We didn't know it was really happening until the ghost came out at the end. And that was a great moment, but maybe that's one thing that maybe if it was clear that that was happening, maybe it would have changed things.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say sort of in summary, I think the lessons from that was timing's important. You don't want to be killing people off early in the game if it means that they have to go play this mini game. I think you need a little bit of a disclaimer. You need to make it clear what's going to happen and not induce anxiety in people.
And they're not like, I don't want to kill this person because I don't want to really mess up their day.
Exactly. And then I guess the last thing is the mini game itself probably needed a bit more work. When we designed it, it was basic and we kind of thought it would do, but in reality, I don't think it was interesting enough for people who had to sit there for half the game.
Yeah, and that's the toughest point that seems to me about designing this kind of system. Like, it seems really cool, but you basically have to design an entire separate mega game for them to play when they die.
Exactly, and that's a big ask. And I guess the final thing as well, from the perspective of the dramatic and the theatrical moments, you can't do this a lot. If you keep doing this in every mega game, it will lose all its impact, I suppose. So you'd have to come up with fresh ideas about what that side game is if you were going to do it.
Yeah, and I'll mention another example of a mega game that did this, which is the game... Survivor Dark Lord. So this is a pretty interesting one. I'm just reading an article about it. It's, most of the players started out in service to the Dark Lord. And they would get basically fighting off the forces of light and goodness and stuff. And the Dark Lord would kill them off when, basically at random. Players could, there was a random ballot box of whoever the Dark Lord would get angry at and kill. And players could pay resources to stuff the ballot box with the names of specific people they wanted to get rid of. Basically the way it worked is when you were killed, you would go to the side of the light and be the forces of goodness, rebels fighting off the Dark Lord. So it started out in the start of the game where most of the players are in the Dark Lord's stronghold or like helping out save things. And then over the day, the tide turns and, you know, the forces of darkness are maybe not destroyed. I guess it depends on how the game would go, but where they become outnumbered. I think that's a really interesting way of doing things, and I'd love to actually see something like that in practice.
Yes, I think not to get off topic and not to peer too much behind the curtain, but that kind of leads into this thing that we've been talking about on and off for a little while, which is kind of like mega games which change. You know, the game itself changes throughout, or there's multiple games happening and you move between them, or whether it's death related or not, it's an interesting concept I'm keen to see more of and explore more of design wise because it just sounds like a challenge, I guess. So
definitely absolutely. So let's branch into talking about how other things approach death. I'll just start out by talking about some RPGs and tabletop role-playing games and some ideas that we could steal from there. I think one of the most interesting things, just analyzing a few different kind of modern RPGs and how they handle this kind of thing, is that the running theme I see is allowing players to have some agency in their own death. Like, to some degree, they are deciding when they get to die or not. So one of the examples of this is Blades in the Dark, which is a fantastic role-playing game, highly recommended. But the way death works in Blades in the Dark is that you have this resource called stress, and you can spend stress to do cool stuff and fancy moves and all that kind of business, but you can also spend it to resist bad consequences for things. So in a mega game context, this would be like, you want to resist your city is being nuked, you want to try to resist it. You might be able to lessen that consequence, and part of the city has been saved, that kind of thing, where you are, or in a role-playing setting, it'd be like, well, I'm about to be shot, I'm going to resist that consequence.
Yep.
And when you use up all of your stress, you get a point of trauma, and getting trauma is how your character eventually dies or is taken out. So in practice, the only way you can really die is if you use all your stress. Because, you know, even if the GM says, I'm going to shoot, you know, this NPC shoots you in the head, you would use stress to resist that consequence. So ultimately, yeah, it's putting the decision of, are you going to die, completely in the hands of the players? Because you're deciding, like, I really don't want this bad thing to happen. Like, I don't want this place to be nuked. I don't want this thing to happen. I don't want my friend to be assassinated. So I'm going to take the stress and block the bullet, you know. It's giving the players the decision, putting that decision in the hands of the players a bit more. And it also makes this resource of stress really tense, like using it feels really momentous and impactful. And the rules, like, you are encouraged in the game to use it as much as you can. The game is meant to be about kind of playing these reckless daredevil characters. So you are encouraged not to worry too much if your character gets taken out, like that's meant to be part of the game. But I think that's a really interesting thing that I can see being a good option for a lot of mega game designs. Like, we were talking about one of the big problems of feeling like there was no way to fend against it, feeling like it came out of nowhere. When you add in this resource, it's like, okay, such and such team has tried to poison you or tried to do this or this and that, this, that, the other bad thing. Having this resource that you can try to block it with, but could end up in your death, I think that's a really interesting thing that could be used.
Yeah. I don't know. No, I agree. I like the idea, and I like the fact that you said the common thread through a lot of modern RPGs is this, where it's like a resource or a thing that gives you control over what's happening. I'm interested in your thoughts here from a design perspective. If you were to map Blades in the Dark stress onto a mega game, my understanding is there's still the risk of death, and there's still the ultimate outcome of death when you take too much stress. So would you mechanize it so that stress is a resource you use, but eventually you do get taken out of the game? Or would you have this side by side with another death mechanic that ultimately takes over at the end?
I'm not sure. That's the question of, I think this is a great idea for how players could die.
Yes.
But what happens when they're dead? Is like,
damn it, Jack, we said we were going to fix it.
Well, I think, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think my thought would be, probably I would give them a different role or a different character.
Right.
And I would set things up at the start of the day, if you were running this type of mega game, where you have a resource you can use, and if you use it, it leads to your death, you would need to set the expectations that this is a game about playing a reckless daredevil where you're probably going to die, you know? I think that would have to be the expectation set, and people are expected, they know there's a backup character for them to swap to that isn't too much of a problem, and they know they're going to go out there and spend their stress to do cool stuff. If you didn't set that expectation, this system could really backfire. And I think this is the same for Blades in the Dark. Like, if you didn't do that and people are like, well, I want to play extremely cautiously, then they will never spend any of their stress and they'll never do anything cool, which
would be really cool. They lose part of the game.
Yeah, like you said.
But yeah, so I think another thing that plays into this would be like pacing. Like, how do you design a system like this with pacing so that the tension builds and this system forces tension to build, but ultimately the reality of them dying is low. And if it happens, it's really close to the end of the game. I think that's an interesting design challenge that would be hard to implement in practice, but in theory would really be this natural slope down to,
you would need to very carefully consider the numbers of how much stress people get and how exactly it works out.
I guess my other thought here, I think I've briefly or vaguely mentioned to you before, but in one of the things that I've got on the burn at the moment, design-wise, is I'm trying to figure out how to use a system like this where players take wounds or scars or whatever you want to call it. And my thought here is that they don't necessarily contribute to the eventual death of the player, but instead, every time they receive one of these things, they get a new goal or objective or something added to their brief that they are really heavily encouraged to go and resolve. And maybe even doing so, it rewards them in some way. So
absolutely.
I can't think of a good example without, you know, going too deep into the thematic idea that I'm of the design I'm working on, but, you know, something that makes them, it gives them a thematic reason to change course in the game and go and pursue this other thing, because it's all of a sudden they are, you know, they're hindered until they achieve that thing. And maybe absolutely. That could be mechanical, like they, you know, they roll less dice until they achieve the goal or something, or it could just be role-playing wise. But that's one approach I'm trying to figure out how to balance.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I think that touches on something that's a really important tool in the toolbox, which is to just say, this mega game doesn't have death in it. Like, I think that's a great, and that's something that I haven't even thought about before as much myself before doing this topic. Like,
you can't,
it's
die.
Just like, oh, well, players are going to ask to assassinate people. That's something they're naturally going to do, right? Like, that's just going to be part of the game. People might die. That was the thought process, but I think a really valuable thing to think is, like, is death actually an important part of this game? And if not, maybe you just can't die. Maybe you can, you know, characters can take wounds or trauma or some kind of problem that they can that is serious, but like actual death is just not a part of this because it's not really relevant or interesting. Like, I think that's a really good tool to use, and that's something that Jim Warman talks about a lot in that article. Is like, the, you know, when someone comes up to you and asks, "Can I assassinate that guy?" the answer might be no.
Yes, right. And I think, like, myself included, I think a lot of people are scared to do that because we're taught not to say no when it comes to these collaborative storytelling kind of, you know, experiences. But I think, mega games walk a specific line. And I think making it really clear from the start, like, again, in Jim's article that I said at the start, where he talks about why are people trying to assassinate others, I think if you say from the start you can't kill other players, then that immediately forces players to think about other ways to navigate challenging relationships or barriers.
Definitely.
So it's almost, you know, it's almost like it's a creative driver to say that you can't knock people out of this game.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and it pushes people to consider other ways to solve problems. Like, you need to negotiate with that person. You need to do something. You can't just kill
change
them
your plan
because they're not giving you what you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. So running through some other RPG ideas, one of them that crops up in a few different RPGs is like the ultimate ability that kills you, which is a really interesting idea. So there's an anime role-playing game called TBZ, where your character has a death box on your character sheet. You have to tick it. Basically, if you don't tick this box during a fight, then you can't actually die. Like, you suffer whatever the other consequences for that anime fight scene are. Like, you know, maybe an NPC dies or your hometown is destroyed or all that kind of stuff, right? But you can't actually die unless you tick this box, and then you get ultra powerful ultimate abilities. You've unleashed yourself, you know, anime style.
So that's like the full leaning into the heroic moment thing that you're
right,
talking about.
That's right. It means, yeah, so that makes death into this big heroic moment if it happens, right? It's like, yeah, I have decided I'm putting it all on the line for this moment to do this thing. I don't know if that one specifically is applicable to mega games, but I do like the idea of it being something players opt into. Like, I think duels in God Emperor or duels in general are a good way to do this, that if you want to challenge someone, you have to go into a duel, and that means putting your life on the line. And if you don't want to do that, then you don't go into the duel. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's a good option for making it something that you do opt into And it becomes a big moment if it happens.
Yeah, I like this because it, I mean, I'm not 100% sure how I would use it in practice, but I like it because it ticks the box of consent. It ticks the box of people knowing what they're in for. It gives them agency over it, controlling this moment and making it really important and big. But I guess it loops back to the same issue I raised with the idea of stress, where this then needs to be supplemented by another system of death to come after that big dramatic moment, unless Absolutely. You just, you know, knock the player out, which is never, I think, the right solution. So
Definitely.
Yeah, a lot of work, I suppose, is what's coming out of a lot of these ideas. But
So that ties into a bit. So what we were talking about before ties a bit into Monster Hearts, similar to the condition ideas, the idea you were talking about. In Monster Hearts, when you would die, you can instead, either you can accept it and you die and you basically take on another role or another character, or you can, Monster Hearts, by the way, is like a very kind of, I think it's like a teen soap opera kind of RPG where you play as teen monsters. Instead of dying, you can activate your darkest self, which is a big melodramatic thing where you've become a werewolf or whatever, you know, like you've gone off the rails. Like it's some big dramatic thing that changes the way you interact with the world. So in a mega game sense, maybe this is something where you've taken a serious condition that is going to affect the way you play out on other people or things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it that you can either choose to die and take a new character or choose to take basically a penalty to your current character. But the penalty ideally is something that's actually interesting and fun and pushes you to do more things. And I think this could be tying into your goal idea, a new goal that now, you know, you've become a werewolf or whatever it is. And again, I think you'd need to use this in some kind of mega game like that. I don't think it would work in a historical mega game necessarily.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe you could become desperate or something, but it could give you a new goal. I think would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Totally agree.
And Mansions of Madness also has a similar mechanic to what you're talking about extra goals, the board game Mansions of Madness, which is that when you go insane or you lose all your sanity, the way that is reflected is that you get a new secret objective, which might push you against the rest of your team. So normally everyone wins together. It's a Lovecraftian game. You have to, you know, investigate the mansion, find out what's going on, stop a Lovecraftian ritual, that kind of business. But yeah, if you lose all your sanity, you get a secret extra goal on top of it. And often this might be something that pits you against your other players a bit, like you need to steal from them, or you need to start fires, or you need to, you know, do something else.
Yep. No, that's totally sort of the avenue I'm going down. That's reaffirming for me that there's no new ideas in design.
That's life, isn't it? Yeah. I think that could be, well, I haven't seen personally played a mega game with that type of mechanic, and I think that would be really interesting to explore.
Yeah. I think a lot of the themes here are definitely about that, how can you expand on the player's experience or hinder them in an interesting way that is not just removing them from the game, making them get a new role, making them do some kind of reset. One that I was role-playing game that I was going to point out was Torchbearer, which is a game I haven't played but I've read about extensively and really want to play. And it fascinated me going into it from games like Dungeons and Dragons that this game doesn't really have hit points per se, but it really leans heavily on conditions. And the characters move through this passage, like this path of conditions. Conditions, you know, starting with just the characters hungry, they're thirsty, their needs haven't been met. Then they get exhausted, then they get sick and injured, and eventually they die at the end of it. And there's like seven or eight different conditions that they move through. And they add both mechanical hindrances, but also thematic hindrances. So even if, you know, in the game per se, they were the character, you know, in a D&D-like role-playing game, you would say that they're hungry or they're tired because there's a mechanical reason. But in this, the rules, the moving down this track of conditions would dictate to you that you now need to add that to your role play because it is the fact that they are tired or scared or hurt. Or
hungry,
Yeah. I like that idea, and I think it could play into the role play side of mega games where instead of saying you're dead, until XYZ is met, you are now exhausted or disillusioned or upset.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would leave players the option to opt in the sense that how far do they want to take that role play? Do they want to just tell people that they're sad now and they get minus one on their die rolls? Or are they going to go around and, you know, really role play it?
Yeah, I really like that idea. And I like, in general, the idea of having conditions instead of just death. Like, of having, you're frightened or you're wounded or you're scarred instead of you're alive or you're dead. I think that kind of thing, you would need to have a way that the consequence for it feels meaningful without being too fiddly. I think I've played a couple of RPGs that have a similar thing. Blades in the Dark does have a similar-ish thing where you can have a condition and it means minus one to your dice rolls if you have, if that condition is relevant. But it's really easy to miss that kind of stuff when you're like rolling dice and doing that kind of thing. So it has to be something that is up front and center, like something that's on your name badge or that is like, it feels like a small amount of conditions that are very meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's how you implement these things through the design of the game would be super, super important. Otherwise, you just land back in that confusion state we were talking about where there's so much intricacy to it all that no one knows what's going on.
Moving into the LARP space, one of the talking about what happens after the character has died, which is one of the big problems for mega games, I think. One of the good ideas that I have heard for LARPs, which are either boffer LARPs, which are mostly about running around, hitting people with foam swords, and role playing your character and doing that kind of thing. In that kind of game, is that usually in these types of games, by the way, you might run a campaign LARP, which is people are showing up every couple of weeks or so to play out this particular character and they're leveling up. And so it's a very long-term commitment to a character. A mega game is kind of similar in that 8 hours is a decent commitment to a character, but it's nothing compared to how much you might be committed to a LARP character where you've been playing them for months or years, which is kind of crazy. One of the ideas that I found was interesting was the idea of rewarding players for dying by giving them cool stuff for their next character, or actually making like, if you die and you get a new character, that new character actually has some bonus of some kind.
Yeah.
Like, it is in some way better than a base game character. I think that's a really interesting idea. It might encourage people. You would need to do it in a type of game where it's okay for people to die all the time. But a great example of how to do this would be if you were in a game like Everybody Dies, is you would make the, you'd have a big stack of the roles that people can take after they're dead and make sure that those roles are, if anything, more interesting than the basic roles and have more going on or more starting resources or whatever it is.
Yes. Yep. No, I like that idea. But you're right. I think it'd be very circumstantial and you'd have to design a game where the point is to thematically die, I suppose. Like
It would have to be something like Everybody Dies, where you're like, you know, you want to play your character a bit recklessly. You want to die, basically. Maybe a Viking game or something like that, right?
And you could still balance it with other things like objectives, like to try not to die. But I think it's by implementing that, you're encouraging it. So I guess you'd want the rest of the design to be around these moments are really important, thematic, dramatic, and this is why they have such an emphasis in our game. But yeah, it's a really good idea.
Another good thing I've seen brought up a lot in LARP spaces is making sure players have a bit of time to have closure. For example, you might have an actual in-game funeral or where the character's spirit can come back to say goodbye to people. Something that makes it a bit of a moment where that character gets to go, I have died, you know, like where there's a, it's emphasized a bit. It's not feeling like this character's dropped dead and you're shuffled off to a new role and we are on a strict timer for this mega game, so we don't have time to think about it. Like taking a bit of time to have some kind of in-game funeral or something like that, I think it could be a really good idea, especially if it, first of all, it's nice to have a bit of closure. It's nice to have a send-off for that person who died.
Yes.
To give them a sense that it wasn't just a random moment that didn't have any impact and didn't have any narrative meaning. Like, it felt like it meant something. That's good. But also, it's good for stopping confusion. Like, if you had a moment, like, let's say at the start of the turn when people are normally doing their team time, if you had a brief moment of doing a funeral for the dead characters or something like that, it's also nice to get the message out there, like, this person has died, they're playing a new character now, to kind of prevent that problem of confusion or just feeling like this character is just an identical twin of the previous character.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's important. There needs to be some kind of admin and logistics to this stuff to avoid that confusion. And that kind of the idea of a funeral reminiscent of God Emperor with the marriages as well. There was a bit of theatrics around that, and the actual mechanical impact was not huge, but they were an important part of the game, and we did take time to stop and witness them.
Yeah, having little ceremonies in mega games is something I want to do more of. there was actually a mechanic for funerals in God Emperor, but it didn't get. I don't think it was used very much. Basically, if you built a certain type of building, you could host a funeral for that character, and that meant you could, I think, keep some of the prestige that you would lose when they died. But it didn't end up being a big part of the game, at least when I ran it. It's definitely something I want to look into more.
Yeah, overshadowed by the jewels, I suppose.
Yeah, well, of course. And the final thing I want to bring up is the Nordic LARP sensibility around this, which is playing to lose, which is Nordic LARP is a type of LARP from, I think, Finland and those, that kind of Norway, Sweden, Denmark, those areas, which is very based around consent. And basically the idea is in this system, very different to a mega game sensibility, but the idea is that nothing bad happens to your character unless you allow it to. And so they have this idea of playing to lose, which is that you're going to say, actually, it would be great for my character to take a deadly wound in this combat. That would be perfect for my story right now. And you're going to deliberately accept that bad consequence. Very different to mega games, because mega games have a lot of war gaming and a lot of board gaming in them. And of course, in a board game, you know, if I kill your troop, you don't get to go, no, I don't think that troop is dead, actually. Like, so that's not a part of it. But I think adding some of that idea in it would be very useful in specific circumstances where it's like giving the player some amount of... and I know there actually was a game called... I think it was called Dragon Thrones, which did combine a Nordic LARP and a mega game. Which I have no idea how that would work, but it does sound kind of crazy. But I think this idea of like this central thing of giving players some ability to decide what bad things happen to them and if those bad things are actually relevant is a decent idea, depending on what kind of game you're making, really.
Yeah, I think its appropriateness varies based on the theme and the genre, but generally you can't go wrong with like that approach to consent and agency for players, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk about that two final mechanics, just exploring it. One is trauma in Arkham Horror, the card game, which is one of my favorite games of all time. It's amazing. The way it works basically is if you are killed, you aren't actually killed, you are defeated when you run out of health or run out of sanity. And that means you take a penalty going forward, which is you take one trauma, which basically lowers your maximum health or maximum sanity, but you are not taken out of the game. You fail forward. And it means you are going to have failed that particular objective or that particular scenario, but you fail forward to the next scenario. Importantly with this thing, having trauma is not actually that bad. And in fact, there are some cards where you might want to have trauma. Like you might want to be a little bit insane to use a particular cool spell or things like that, right? So that's just another kind of fail forward mechanic. I think it would be similar to the condition idea we've been throwing around.
Yes.
Absolutely. And the final thing I'll mention is death in the epilogue. This is something I've done in a few parlor LARPs I've run or murder mysteries I've done, which is that instead of being assassinated on the spot, you are poisoned or you are in some way given a deadly wound, which means you will die at the end of the game in the epilogue. It basically transforms death into just a narrative consequence for what happens in the end of the game. It means that you can say, I'm poisoned, I'm dying, you know, I've received a deadly wound. I need to make these last moments count. And you have the time to act out that desperation and to try to find the person who gave you this wound or ordered your assassination attempt. You know, you have the time to role play that out. And then at the end of the game, you play out the story of how you die. So just a narrative consequence for death, no actual mechanical consequence at all. Like you still get to play the game just as much as you want, but you know that, you know, in terms of quote unquote winning the mega game or whatever, you know that at the end of the game, it'll be the story that, you know, the Prime Minister of France died from this war wound.
Yep. I like that. And I can actually see that happening in some mega games really well for like based on genre and the theme of a game and how you do that post game wrap up. A role playing game that I would point out that does that I have played is 10 Candles, which is quite gimmicky, but pretty cool and very much a free form game, loose mechanics that is around, similar to one of my favorite video games, which tells you right at the start that you're going to die. 10 Candles is, it does that. The point of the game is to tell the final part of the story and the characters are going to die or pass away or otherwise be defeated. And so it gives you not only the agency to control it, knowing that that's how it's going to end, but the ability to tell that story, like, you know, from the start, so you can slowly build up to it and, you know, foreshadowing and all the rest of it make the deaths really meaningful. That was a really eye-opening game to play, I suppose, as far as storytelling goes in role-playing games. And I think you could apply a lot of that to mega games if people have the expectations set at the start.
I think it would be a great fit if you are doing something a bit Lovecraftian or that style of thing, is like your character is doomed, you know, like, you know, you're still going to keep playing, but you know your character is doomed and that you are going to go insane or die or whatever it is at the end.
And that's 10 Candles in a nutshell, really. It's a survival horror game, I suppose. It's very vague on the setting. You get to design the setting as the players yourselves. And basically, you sit around the table, you have some tea light candles lit, and everyone gets a chance to say these things, which are then canon in the story. They're truths about the situation. So, you know, our resources are low, these things are coming to us, and blah, blah, blah. And then people role play a scenario, and slowly there's a dice pool that's used. And as you roll those dice and use it to overcome challenges, the dice pool decreases. Every time the pool runs out, you blow out one of the candles and you do like a scene change. And then the game basically naturally ends that way. You get through all the scenes, things get more dire, the dice pool gets lower, which makes the scenes go faster and the tension build. And then, from the start of the game, you know the last scene that you play out, everyone has to die. You got to figure out how that happens.
Yeah,
it's kind of morbid, but it is interesting as a storytelling exercise.
Yeah, and I'd love see to play it sometime.
See it mapping to a mega game for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a variation of this idea you could use with mega games is kind of set that final turn aside for the bit where everyone dies, right? Like everyone who has become doomed or become mortally wounded throughout the game, you go through and make that a major part of the final debrief, and you make that take up a bit of time of like how those people died and then what the people who are left did I think that'd be a great fit for a horror mega game or something similar.
Yeah, I think that's very important, which is probably a good segue to, you know, ideas that, you know, a bit of a recap, I guess, of what we've gone over and ideas that we should explore in games.
Mm.
One of them being, I think, I don't want to be too rigid with this, but I think theatrics are important and that death is more important in these games to the story than it is to mechanics.
Yeah,
I think that should be the design philosophy.
I think that's definitely what I've come away with too. I think in video games, of course, or board games, death can be very important mechanically. You know, if you're playing a really hard video game or a Dark Souls or something like that, death is super important to the mechanics of that game. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely coming away with from this conversation feeling like the actual mechanics of death in mega games aren't really an important part. And I guess that's mega games in general, but it's more about, did you feel like this death was important to the story and important to the narrative?
Mm.
And the actual consequences don't matter that much. Like, I mean, we talked about in the opening with God Emperor, the fact, like, I think some of those big duels or the moment when someone was executed for heresy against the God Emperor, that was a very memorable moment that people came away with, even though the actual mechanical consequence for that was basically nothing. Like, he just gave all his stuff to another member of the team and then took it back when he was playing Archibald the Second or whatever. And that was okay, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, it's different. I guess, I mean, it goes back to what players are expecting and also what they want out of the game. So what you line them up for and then also what they want out of it. I would asterisk that statement by saying mechanics are still important.
Yeah.
I think that if you're going to do it, if you bother doing death, then you should have a backup mechanic for it.
Yeah.
But it's not the most important part. It's about making it a big moment.
Yeah.
And meaningful in people's story at the end of the day, rather than meaningful in the die rolls or whatever else it is.
Mm. And I think the next big thing, really important, is disclaimers and consent and making it clear what the role of death is in your game. It's like, if this is everybody dies the mega game, if this is a game where death is really important, making that very clear up front and saying like, yeah, is this a game where everyone is meant to die? I would actually say from this conversation, if death isn't an important enough part of your game to have a disclaimer like that, maybe don't include it. Like, maybe it isn't actually an important part of the game. Maybe if someone comes up to you and says, I want to kill this player, I want to assassinate this player, maybe that's the point when you say, no, that's not actually an important part of my genre or my historical period or my game.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. I think another point that we've done to death here is as an idea, a way to execute, doing separate roles, new roles, changed roles. But I think the thing that we've added to that and has been experimented with already, I think it's important that there's some kind of reward or, you know, satisfying outcome to actually stepping away and then coming back into a new role. So like you were saying, bouncing into a new role where you're kind of rewarded because you got a little bonus to go with now to kick you off into the new role in the game.
Yeah. The new role that they, the backup character, the new role they're going into, it needs to be something they can just slide into pretty easily and that is fun and interesting, obviously. I think that's, and I think if possible, it should feel in some way meaningfully different, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that's something that the Archibald the Second route definitely doesn't do. Like, even if it's just, you've got a, I really even feel like even if it's just like you have a big box of eye patches for people to wear after they've died or like some kind of meaningful change, like to signify this is a new character, I feel like even that amount of distinction would be.
Mm. You could even go as far, and this is quite intricate and at the same time subtle, but in these games where, for example, fresh in my mind, Crisis in Elysium, there's a whole bunch of cards in that game. Like, everything is card driven. Even this mechanic where maybe there's some symbols on some cards and it's like these cards have extra impact if they're used by a new player, like a new role, one of the freshly minted characters, or freshly minted characters are immune to these effects or something like that, you know, like a little mechanical thing that isn't necessarily thematic, but it's just a bonus to say, hey, you died. Sorry, you might not have enjoyed that, but now you at least have a little mechanical bonus as well on the side. So don't stress so much about that. Now you can, you know, lean into the role play of it all.
Absolutely. Next thing. I think one of the biggest things I'm taking away from it, at least, is the idea of just having alternate stuff other than death, like the getting the condition, or like your character hasn't died, they've been wounded, they have an extra objective now, because they've been terribly wounded in this battle, you know. I think that is something that I feel like almost, not that it should be the default, but that it should be explored more, at least in my own designs.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely keen to explore it, but I would be, you know, we said we'd come and fix all the problems and get all the solutions, so I will be bold and say, I think that should be the default. If you don't know about death in your game, if you don't know about using it, or you want to experiment with it, but you're too, you know, you're worried about the consequences, I think that should be the default. Come up with an alternate method of hindering, giving you objectives or mechanics, some other signifier that isn't necessarily death and doesn't necessarily encourage death, but is otherwise a way of raising the stakes.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably something I'm going to look at as like the default going forward. Like, unless your game is about death, or death is a really serious part of the game, I feel like let's say it's an assassination attempt in a Watch the Skies style game. I feel like if the president gets assassinated and they get some kind of condition card of like, you know, now they've been poisoned and they need to constantly take a particular type of medicine, like there's some kind of meaningful consequence for them, like they need to do something, like have some kind of interesting role play goal or interesting consequence to their gameplay, or maybe they can't make certain they can't go to certain places now because they, you know, they're too wounded to make the journey, you know, things like that. Like, I think having that feels a lot more meaningful, at least to me, and you still get the big scene where the big thing happens, and you don't have to go through a lot of the confusion of the shuffle. I don't know. I think it's a great alternative, at least.
No, I like that idea. And in using that example of Watch the Skies, even though this totally removes, like, you know, this is a leap out of reality, which, you know, mega games are. If you, when you're assassinated, like you said, it's that you have to use this medicine, and that uses up one of your resource points each turn. So you have to decide, you have to keep doing that. Maybe it becomes more expensive, and that becomes a plot that goes through the game. The person who tried to kill you knows that they've had that impact, so they're still a bit satisfied. And that plot could evolve, like mega game plots do. Like, someone might, another team might learn about that and then try to infiltrate the pharmaceutical industry to make that, the price of that thing go up or something like that.
You know? Like, or your team could be like, we're paying through the nose for all this medicine. Like, we need to invest in one of the corporations players, you know. Maybe you have to go to a specific corporation for this medicine, you know. But it all becomes like much more, I feel like that can be a lot more of an interesting story than like, instead of President John, we have President John the Second, you know?
And then the media just has a, you know, a little line saying, oh, the president was assassinated. And that's it. Like, yeah.
It's true. Things are always so much more lackadaisical. You're like, you consult the newspaper. You're like, what? I got assassinated and only made page two?
Yeah, exactly. I really love the idea, though. It's such a mega game thing that a team would spend $1 billion a quarter keeping the president alive, like on life support or something. It's very good.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but I think the idea is really good.
No, I like it.
The next thing is having a separate, like we just talked about it, having a separate mega game for the dead characters, I think is a great idea, but it is, it just seems like a ton of work. It's something you only do if, like, that is the main consequence and the main idea of your mega game, like the Survivor Dark Lord mega game. It's like that's what it's been built around.
And having done that to a minor degree, and you know, we talked about it before, I think I could have done it better and it needs a lot more thought, but I think that is an awesome route to take. But you need to commit to it, and you, like you say, you need to make the game about that. You can't half-ass it and just have a little thing on the side, because it will end up being potentially more disappointing if people were just given, you know, a John the Second name tag. Yeah. If that side game is not designed well enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think we did solve a lot of the problems. I think we've concluded everything we need to. I think it's very clear now exactly how to do death in mega games.
Or at least if, you know, if you somehow still have questions, at least we'll have a lot of interesting articles in the bottom talking about different ways to handle it. And I think that Jim Woolman one is actually a pretty huge one of like, hey, here's some alternate ways to look at when someone comes in and asks you to assassinate another player. Like, here are some other options to explore before you just leap to allowing
that. Yes, super important. I think big takeaway from all of this thought process for me is, why do players want to do this? And if the answer to that is anything other than just because, then there's probably alternate things to dig into as the control member or as the designer to say, all right, so why do they want to do it? How can I encourage them to approach that differently? Mm. And I think that's where you create interesting stories and plots and stuff and get players to use creativity. So, yeah, really important.
Awesome. Well, to round this out, we've got some great death stories from various people. I might read some of these out. So this first one is from Chris Brown. From Mega Game Assembly. He says, I was playing a pretty crazy anti-alien Russian president. I think Russia is always a bit off the wall in these Mega Games. Always tends to get happy with the nukes, at least in my games. And I found out that the aliens were hiding 20-foot tall robots in Germany with the German government's permission. After showing them news footage of these giant robots in the alien base and the aliens refusing to deny they could destroy humanity, I decided to confront the German team.
I have to say also that why do giant robots always come into Mega Games as well?
When you give people creative freedom, they've got to make the giant robots.
Yeah.
They refused to expel the aliens, so I went on the offensive. I ordered our military to try to take Eastern Europe, but I forgot about NATO being a thing. Our military got repelled, so I got angry in character and gave the Germans one last chance. They refused to expel the robots, so I launched a nuke at Berlin, killing millions. Of course, the giant robots survived the smoking ruins of the German capital. Was I wrong? I don't think so. The Americans predictably fired nukes at Moscow, killing millions of innocent civilians, and then quietly launched nukes at the moon to destroy some other alien base. After all this happened, my foreign minister turned on me and sent Spetsnaz to assassinate me. I was mortally wounded and fled to the Vatican. Heck knows why. While out there, the Catholic Church, and while the Catholic Church refused to help me directly, they didn't turf me out either. I believe I died on a table in a back room somewhere, watching as the Russian military sent the remainder of the Russian army up the Thames to attack London. I was so proud as they were being repelled by NATO. I watched the last turn from the kitchen, drinking a cup of tea, when one of the foreign ministers came out of the UN, did a double take as he walked past me, and said something like, I'm so glad we raised funds to kill you. Cheap.
That goes back to the, I like that. It goes back to that, the lunacy of spending resources on stuff. I can imagine a big UN group saying, all right, what do we do about this rogue general? How many millions of dollars are we going to invest in taking you out?
I've been in, lots of crazy stuff has happened at the UN, but I've never been in one where the UN voted to assassinate a minister, the Russian president.
Yeah. Epitome of a mega game story, I think, right there.
Awesome. We've got one here from Andrew Hadley. In my 2010 Come to a King, which is a mega game about Britain and Scandinavia in the 11th century, I cast Jim as Swegen Forkbeard with a scripted death in turn one. After the scripted death, he donned a black robe and wandered the hall as death with a pointy scythe. Several key characters had scripted deaths, and also quite a few characters died in battle, including the historic Macbeth, killed by Vikings. The player returned as the papal legate and scooped more than the GDP of Britain in bribes. The epic Irish invasion of England was stopped at Gloucester when the Irish High King was killed in a duel. which I hadn't written rules for, but the players did it anyway. despite Chrissy and Ollie's best efforts, the betrayal death count was low. The recently crowned High King of Wales was assassinated, however, but it was a case of mistaken identity. The English assassin got the wrong Griffood.
I like this because this is commitment to a bit where someone dies scripted on turn one and then just wanders around as death. I like that. I like the idea of scripted deaths as well. I think that is totally, I think it fits well in a historic game, probably more than anything else, but it is an interesting concept. If you've got the right players and they're in for that. Yeah.
This is a great thing that we didn't even mention, but the idea of a scripted death is really great because the player can opt into that role. They're like, yep, I'm excited to play, you know, this person who is brutally assassinated. They know what the backup role is or what the role change is going to be. So they're not going to be surprised by it. They're not going to be like, oh, I didn't want to play this new role. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a whole other avenue that we didn't even get to. So thanks to everyone who contributed stories and also has gone and discussed these things in the past, written articles. Like you said, Jack, we will put links to a whole bunch of that. And keen to hear more from people, I suppose. I think this, like the subject of what is a mega game, I think this is something that can be talked about at length. Despite all our... Well, my joking. I don't think there's any answer to any of it, of course. Likewise goes with any mega game design, really. But there's some really good ideas coming out, and always keen to hear from others. So get in touch if you've got any thoughts on anything we've discussed or anything that we missed.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of ideas that I've taken out of this discussion, at least. But I'm sure a lot of people will have completely... different thoughts on how a death in megagames should work.
On that note, we've talked a lot about death. Probably need to go and revitalize with something more optimistic. But good talking to you, Jack.
Great talking to you.
Hope everyone enjoyed, and we'll catch you all soon.